Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 78. I hope you didn't get used to having three people on the podcast because we are once again down to two. Colin is in the penalty box for the penalty of
sleeping.
Exactly, sleeping in. In fact, actually, hold on a second, Ben. I'm gonna go away for about 10 minutes while I look over the replay just to make sure that he's not on the podcast, and then I'm gonna come over and confirm that, yeah, he's not on the podcast today. I'm Alex. You obviously heard Ben's voice. What's up, Ben? How are you doing?
Hi. Oh, I'm good.
I want to start this week's conversation with something near and dear to my heart. Fourth liners.
Wait, are we talking about Michael Haley's game-winning goal with the Florida No, we're not doing that.
How did you even know that?
Because I'm on Twitter.
It's like you pay attention to Michael Haley way more than any normal human being probably should. What's Sean Scott up to? Do you know?
I don't know. I think he's selling his body on the side.
He doesn't strike me as a guy who would sell his body or really get a good price for it. No offense to John Scott. I don't know.
That sounds offensive to me. Hold on.
I did always feel like he looked like Sabretooth in the X-Men movies. You don't think so? There's a little bit of that, a little bit. we're going to get to the games in a little bit, but as always, we like to start with talking about something relevant to the week. And actually, before we get to the fourth liners, we talked a couple of weeks ago about how the Sharks have been upping their promotional game, and you probably thought that we were boring corporate shills, but now, now you've seen what we are referring to, not that we knew in advance at all. And that is the Joe Thornton shirtless bobblehead. Ben, I got to tell you, I love going to Sharks games. I have never in my life gotten a ticket for any sporting event because of a promotion. I have gone to a game and said, I must get there on time to get this promotion that I'm already supposed to receive. But I've never bought tickets just because of it. And I got to say, this bobblehead, not only did it make the rounds in the larger like sports news sphere, which is incredible, but that is one of the most creative and awesome giveaways I think the Sharks have ever done. Are you going to try and get a shirtless Joe Thornton or what?
Joe.
Oh, you saw.
But I could tell you were super, super enthused about it because you posted twice on our Facebook page about it.
Exactly. It's so important. You don't think that's cool? It's a pretty badass bobblehead.
I think what is, again, you know, going back to a topic previous, you know, it's indicative that there's someone really paying attention on the Sharks PR and marketing side to kind of the zeitgeist of the Sharks community.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's awesome. Right.
Yeah. This is the bobblehead that I always wanted, but didn't know it and didn't know I could have, and didn't even know I could suggest it and didn't even know you could make it.
I mean, it probably shouldn't have been made.
Oh no, it should have been made. In fact, I'm surprised it's not a double bobblehead with Brody shirtless right next to it. In fact, actually, I would go get that bobblehead. And I'm not even the biggest Brody Brazil fan. I like him, but it's just the idea. It's
you know what?
Do something quirky and fun and personable versus sort of the boring run-of-the-mill. Like even the Joe Pavelski bobblehead this week is like Captain America. It's not just Joe Pavelski.
Right. No, that's a really great one too. Can I be positive actually for like 2 or 3 minutes?
No, because then I won't believe that you're really you, but go ahead.
I kind of like Brody Brazil.
Oh, I like Brody Brazil too. I was just
kidding. When he first joined the broadcast years ago.
Right.
I didn't like him. And it's not just because his name sounds like a bad porn name.
No, he was really cheesy, but then he grew on you.
But he's so good now.
Yeah, he's great.
Brody, I don't think you listen to us, but dude, I mean, good job growing into that role and finding your place in the organization. And you know, I'll talk about it. Do you remember way back when they did that video where he was taking hits from Kyle MacLaren?
Yeah, and everyone was rooting for it.
Everyone was rooting for Kyle MacLaren. Like today, yeah. I would actually root for Brody.
Well,
that's how big
Brody's much better on the air than Kyle. I mean, let's be real.
Well, there's that.
Kyle MacLaren has some pretty crazy suits. I will say that. He's got some bold style.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't honestly know what it exactly it is that won me over to him.
I do.
It's not like he came into it with a lack of hockey knowledge. It's not like he was a poser or anything like that. I guess it's maybe, you know, maturation of his perspective and his broadcast persona is probably the way I would put it.
I think it's mainly the broadcast persona. I think when he first came in, he came off as like your cheesy younger brother. And then after a while, that kind of became like a run-on gag to the point where now it's cool and very warm and very human. And the great thing about it is when you look at the recent grouping of Sharks broadcasters, you know, when Drew Mendel left, that hurt. Yeah. And, you know, eventually Randy will retire and that will hurt.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel okay knowing that Brody will probably still be around at that point and there'll still be that bit. And not only that, I will say this too about Brody Brazil, which I'm really impressed with. When Curtis Brown first came on, I did not like Curtis Brown on the broadcast team at all. Again, nothing against Curtis Brown. He was really unseasoned and he's grown and he's fixed a lot of that. But now Brody has created this sort of like jokey, playful rivalry with him that I know you don't watch a lot of the intermission breaks and pre and post game, but the two of them together have kind of become like a little Laurel and Hardy. And it's great. And that's really hard to pull off. There's a lot of broadcasters that come in that are just forgettable.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, as you say, I've never warmed to Jamie Baker in the role as sort of partner in crime to Randy. And part of that is just because how good Baldy was in that role. And,
yes, right.
And I don't think anybody, I mean, I don't know that there's anybody who could partner with Randy to the same way that he did. They, you know, they broadcast together for so long. They just had each other's number, if you know what I mean, right? Like they knew exactly what the other guy was going to say and built off of it in an interesting way. And Jamie just doesn't have that, especially because now they put the poor guy down on the ice level whenever they can.
Yeah, I think that splits up the chemistry a lot. I actually didn't mind Jamie when he was on the radio with Dan Rusinowski. And I love Dan Rusinowski, but Dan Rusinowski's style is very straight. You know what I mean? And Jamie Baker was just like, as the color guy, was like the most opposite personality you could put on. And it was weird at first, and then I got used to it. But I totally agree with you. And I think him being down on the bench is not really, helping.
No, I
like Brett Hedekin too, but like I feel like Brett Hedekin and Randy together, there's not enough flavor there, right? So
no, but I think I do like Hedekin more just as an analyst.
Oh yeah, for sure.
than Jamie, and it's, you know, they both played the game. It's no knock on Jamie's career. I mean,
it's probably because Hedekin has less of an association with the club.
Because yeah, it could be.
Because Jamie Baker, as much as I love Jamie Baker, like, you know, he comes off as very Homer, like extremely Homer, like more Homer than Drew did. Because when Drew would get upset, Drew would legitimately scream and get upset.
There's the thing, though. Like, I never really thought of Drew as a Homer because he was perfectly happy to rip into a guy.
Yeah.
If he felt like he needed to. And that, by the way, is the thing that I loved that apparently Edmonton fans just don't like at all.
Well, I got bad news for you, Edmonton fans. It's not all rose bushes, rose petals where you are.
You actually mentioned like a nightmare scenario for the Sharks too, because, you know, you say Randy Hahn someday is not going to be there to be the color. And that's, I don't think there's anybody.
You mean the play-by-play?
Or play-by-play. I don't think there's anybody in the organization who can.
I know who it's going to be. I know who it's going to be. I know exactly. No, you don't see it coming. You haven't seen what they're doing. You haven't seen Randy Jr.
Tell me
when they
you mean
bring
real
up,
Randy Jr.
No, when they bring up the Barracuda guy.
Mm.
They even have the same-ish style. It's really noticeable to me. In fact, I actually pointed it out to my wife the other day. I was like, I'm kind of betting that depending on when Randy retires, if this guy's still around, he's probably going to be the guy they're going to bump up because he's starting to get more and more segments with Randy as well.
Hmm.
And he doesn't strike me as a, I mean, I don't really, I follow the Barracuda via, you know, articles and stats and box scores. I don't have the AHL subscription, so, you know, I don't know what his exact play-by-play is, but, yeah. But hey, the point of this whole thing was that the bobbleheads are awesome. Ben, I do want to move on. I do want to move on to the to the fourth liners. Or, you know, look, maybe they're not necessarily always the fourth liners, but I think in the grand scheme of the team where you would normally just kind of feel that they would be on the fourth line. We've had guys like Goodrow up making a little bit of noise. Dan O'Regan making a little bit of noise. Although, what's up with O'Regan, dude?
Well, he's going to go be the savior for the Barracuda, apparently, again.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently,
4 points in 8 games on the fourth line.
Apparently, when you do really well up here, they decide that the minor league team needs you to lift them. Kind of a weird strategy.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit baffled by the decision to continue to play Hanson, Ward, and Bodker over some of the guys who probably should be getting more NHL seasoning. But that's PDB for you.
Especially since, you know, I've seen people put forward the argument of, well, you got to play them to show them off, to trade them. But with those contracts, well, it's from Bodker's contract. Good luck trading that one. You're not going to. That's not a good, unless you're going to pick up a vast majority of the salary. That's probably not going to happen. And it is frustrating because I thought Dan O'Regan played great. And, you know, yeah. I've been hot on him for quite a while now, but he's one of those guys that's, you know, he's got a bit of a spark to him. And I know you can't really necessarily measure that, but you see it. Like you see it when players like him and even really Goodrow right now get on the ice.
You and I see it, but unfortunately the most important guy doesn't.
Yeah, true. he's probably facing the wrong direction looking for a Joe Thornton shirtless bobblehead in the audience.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a story of the week and maybe of the season up to this point, is which of the young guys is going to really, you know, jump in and seize a spot, right? Especially when you talk about the fourth line, when you talk about rotating cast of characters like Ryan Carpenter, Daniel O'Regan, right. Joel Ward, LeBanc spent some time on the fourth line, Hanson spent some time on the fourth line, Meyer spent some time on the fourth line. If nobody really kind of has, I guess, in the long run, like each of these guys has had a few good games here or there.
Right.
Carpenter hasn't really scored, but I thought he's been pretty good centering that line when he's had opportunities. Here's the thing that boggles me the most. So, you know, something that has been an organizational talking point about the future here the last couple of years has been team speed. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And not that O'Regan's that fast.
Although I don't know that that's been an organized, has the organization really talked about that or have fans and analysts?
Especially entering last year, I think that was a thing that Doug Wilson specifically talked about, right? He mm-hmm. talked about what hurt the Sharks in the matchup against the Penguins and what the future of the league, quote unquote, was a little bit more speed. Now that didn't pan out for the Sharks last year, partly again, thanks to playing decisions.
Right.
And this year has certainly been an opportunity, I think, for the organization to try to put more speed on the ice with Sorensen, O'Regan, Carpenter. I mean, relative to guys who are a bit slower, particularly Ward, you know, and what we've seen at least is that DeBoer has, rather than emphasizing speed, has emphasized what he sees as sort of veteran presence most of the time. I mean, right. We even saw, granted, you know, injuries I think played a part to it, but we even saw, despite the fact that Ryan and Heed have played tremendously while Martin's been hurt, we saw Martin draw back in when he probably wasn't quite ready last night, partly because Dylan is an idiot and got himself a suspension. But, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that we're going to see a lot of Martin going forward when he's healthy, regardless right. of that alleged, you know, sort of position about we need more speed. And then also the fact that, you know, at this point, Ryan and Heed are probably both better players than Martin.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it comes down to you're paying Martin, right?
See, but that's...
It's stupid. It's stupid.
That's good money after bad, right? I mean, same thing with Bodker. Like, Bodker and
Hold on a second. Before you go, money. Let's just be clear. I don't think that Bodker contract was a reward contract for anything that he had earned. Do you?
Right.
Because was that where you were going to go?
No. It's more of a like, look, these guys are on your roster.
Right.
You made the poor decision to sign Bodker, and he's been garbage. You made the not as poor decision to sign Martin, and he's just kind of aged out of the role.
Right.
So regardless of what the cap hit is, your job as an organization is to put the best 12 forwards on the ice and the best six defensemen on the ice. It doesn't fucking matter whose money, whose contract is more expensive than anyone else's. Guy shouldn't get to play just because he costs more.
Yeah, but Ben,
you know what
Ben,
I mean? Like
from the perspective of someone who wants to win games.
Oh,
that's my crazy talk.
My bad. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think that I don't think the organization is trying to lose games.
No, of course not.
I just don't think they recognize what actually wins them the games at this point. If they're going to play Martin over Ryan and Heed, if they're going to play Bodker. Ward, I mean, granted, like Ward's been all right, but you know, you and I talked about this offline. What are the Sharks doing this year? What is the development goal? What is the overall goal of the season? And you know, going into this season, me, and many of the fans saw that this is an opportunity to see what these young guys can do. And you are, frankly, not getting that done with Ward on the ice.
Right.
You are frankly not getting that done with Bodker wasting possessions, regardless of what he's worth. Like, you and I both agree that Bodker is not tradable without, you know, paying part of his salary or only getting a fifth rounder back. But I think
a large chunk of his salary.
Yeah, totally.
That's a bad contract.
Yeah, I agree. And at this point, like, it would be addition by subtraction to get that guy's total incompetence on the ice out of the organization.
Right.
Regardless of whether a guy is ready to step into that role, like the organization looks and puts him on the ice and must see him as some kind of net positive, but he's just not. And even if the guy who would replace him isn't at the moment a net positive, the point of this season is supposed to be, I think you probably think as well, to identify which guys are here for the long term and which ones aren't.
Right.
Because in a month, this team has some pretty difficult decisions to make as to whether they spend the money to bring in a guy or not.
It's just a countdown to Tavares. We know this. And that's been in the news a lot lately, too, is the Sharks as a potential logical destination. But yeah, it's interesting, Ben, because I got to be honest with you, you know, as much as we talked about this season sort of being the feeling outtending of the of what the future of this team was going to potentially look like based off of, you know, guys like Hurdle, I'm kind of split, right? Just in terms of there are guys that are getting a lot more play that I just assumed wouldn't because of DeBoer. Like, I wasn't really sure LeBanc was going to be up as much as he's been up and getting as many minutes as he's been getting. I wasn't really sure Tierney was either. Like, I was hoping that they would, but I thought that they were going to focus all their evaluation really mostly on Hurdle and have the other guys literally just on the fourth line and then obviously continue to play guys like Martin and Ward. And Martin and Ward have gotten, you know, awards out in the press box for a while.
Yeah, but not as long as he probably should have been.
No,
Martin's only been off the ice because he's been mostly dead all year.
No, but I'm not talking about more than he should have. I'm talking about, did you think he would even be in that much? I didn't.
On the ice that much. I hoped he wouldn't.
No, I mean, I didn't think he'd be in the press box as much as he's already been in the press box.
I don't know. I honestly don't know how to evaluate this team's progress at this point of the season, because I don't understand what the team is doing from night to night. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they seemed in agreeing that Marlowe asked for too much in too many years. It seemed to me that the organization recognized that it wasn't worth breaking the bank to go for it again. Right?
Right, right. Well, and, well, probably more along the lines of that wasn't going to be what got the team over the hump at that point.
Well, I mean, who knows?
Do you really think that just re-signing Marlow this year would have made, you know, a massive difference? I mean, and don't look at his numbers right now in Toronto, right? Because there's resurgence-ish stuff that kind of comes with being moved in the situation that he's in. Like, you know, I'm not necessarily saying the Sharks would be better or worse, but I don't think the Sharks would have been any more of a cup team with him on the roster at the moment.
I don't mean about the reality of right. what the team would be. I mean that if they, you know, in the decision to say, you know what, no, we don't want to lock ourselves into that for one more run, they made a tacit admission that this year was going to be different, that they needed somebody to emerge to fill that role, plus probably a couple of other top six roles, right?
Right.
Which means that you got to play the assholes. That's all I mean.
Yeah.
So not that they've ever made any public statement about, you know, what their thinking was around that. But then they go, you know, they went and signed Jumbo to a kind of ridiculous one-year contract, which then sort of makes you feel like somebody in the organization thinks that there may be a player and a half away from Stanley Cup contention. And let's be honest, like, no, I don't think this team is going to win a Stanley Cup this year. I'd be crazy to say that, but you know, get into the playoffs healthy,
yeah,
playing the system that DeBoer does,
right,
and get good goaltending or even crazy goaltending for a couple weeks, and you're the LA Kings from 2014.
Do you not think they're going to make the playoffs? I think they're going to.
No,
2014. Yeah, I think they're going to make the playoffs for sure.
2013, 2014 was the year that they kind of came out of nowhere, eighth
yeah, seed yeah.
To win, is what I mean.
Right.
Right. That's, it's possible until you run into the Penguins in the Stanley Cup role. Right. So I think, you know, if they could pry loose a scoring guy with the cap space they've got going, if they get in, you know, in a month from now, if they're in a position to ride into the playoffs in the sixth, seventh, or eighth spot, or God forbid the third spot, who knows, man? I mean, crazy stuff happens. It's not likely. Here's the thing though. Again, like, this team is actually really good from a possession perspective. They're just
right.
not putting the puck into the goal, which, you know, some teams are unlucky and some teams, you know, when you look at them, they just don't have the shooters to do it. How you separate the two, I'm going to leave to much smarter people than I am. And I tend to think that the Sharks have been a little unlucky. And, you know, going back to the topic of fourth liners, they sure would benefit if Barkley Goodrow keeps up what he has been giving them over the last week when he's been healthy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's scored a couple of pretty good grindy goals.
He's had a good row. Oh, I know. I had to do it, though.
No,
I'm following in the footsteps of Brody Brazil after our earlier conversation.
You didn't have to do it. You really didn't.
I did a little bit. I did just enough.
So, but that's the thing. Again, like, Goodrow, it's taken most of the season for him to even get a chance to play consistently, and then he got hurt. But he at least drew back in when he was feeling better. And may it's hard to say though whether that is because he's finally out of DeBoer's doghouse, or because like half the forward core is hurt right now. I mean, Bodker is potentially going on IR, which is great, by the way, because I don't think he'd be out of the lineup except that he's hurt. Obviously, Donskoy's hurt, and that is bad for the Sharks' offense.
Right.
So now, you know, folks are kind of assuring the people who are asking that Donskoy's not hurt long term, but we saw what a shoulder injury did to him last year, so who knows?
Right. I agree. Let's get into the games, man.
Oh, do we have to?
Look, let's just be honest. All you podcast listeners right now, if you want the good stuff, skip over to the last game against the Hurricanes. But first, The Sharks took on the Tampa Bay Lightning in Tampa Bay. It was the second game of a back-to-back. And dare I say it, not the prettiest of games. Sharks lost this one 5-2. They were dramatically outshot, 43-27. Barclay Goodrow, as we mentioned before, scored. Hey, Dan Regan and Carpenter getting the assists on that guy. Justin Braun, about midway through the third, also scored a goal with, again, Dan Regan. But the Sharks, I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't really enjoy this game too much. I don't really know how to put it beyond that. I didn't feel like Jones looked particularly sharp. I don't think the Sharks looked particularly sharp. You know, second game in a back-to-back.
Well, third game on a road trip.
Right.
I mean, and you're going to play the best offense in the league. You know, this stuff happens. I mean, it's obviously, it's a no-brainer to say that Tampa Bay is better than the Sharks. I don't think anybody would call me crazy for saying that, and they showed it in this game.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the Sharks are the best defensive team in the league, but the best offense is going to beat the best defense, it appears, in, you know, the NHL in 2017.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that kind of summed it up.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, what more is there really to say? I mean, Tampa Bay dominated the Sharks in kind of every phase of this game. It was not fun to watch at all.
A little bit of theme of the week.
I mean, the only line that really had much of a game was the fourth line, ultimately. And right. If your fourth line is your best line on the ice, you're not going to win a lot of games.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless the top three lines are just neutralizing each other, and it all comes down to the fourth line.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many times that's actually happened. Not a ton.
I mean, you'll be happy with that in the playoffs. You're probably not happy with that most of the time in the regular season.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Why don't we mosey on to the second game?
Yeah,
this team will always be near and dear to my heart, not because of Ovechkin, but because my first Sharks game, I think I've mentioned this a million times, the first Sharks season was against the Capitals. But this one didn't really go the Sharks' way. Capitals won 4-1, the only Sharks goal coming from Timo Meier. However, and I'm sure you're going to throw in a little bit of score effects there, Ben, but the Sharks didn't play anywhere near as poorly this game as they did against the Lightning. In fact, Sharks had some pretty good opportunities to potentially win this game. They just didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Sharks were the better team on the ice most of the first period.
Yeah.
And clearly were deflated by that Smith-Pelly goal, which was, you know, an insane tip. There's not too much you could do about that goal.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know, I wouldn't even say necessarily score effects.
It wasn't.
Most of the second?
Yeah, it wasn't so much, but you could certainly, I just assumed you were going to read it that way if I tried to say, well, the Sharks.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. This was kind of, I felt like, a back and forth game through much of the second period. And then, I don't know, I mean, the Sharks were, they were definitely, don't get me wrong, I do think, like, after the second goal, and then definitely by the third goal, Washington kind of backed off a little bit. And then the Sharks, it felt to me like they weren't super interested for most of the third period in doing much. I don't know. Weird game, one that the Sharks probably could have actually been on the other. I could have seen this being a 4-1 game for the Sharks in some sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. It just wasn't.
It just wasn't, and those you're going to have games like that. And I don't think Jones was particularly sharp.
No, I agree.
And, you know, he goes through those periods of the season where he's not. And hey, spoiler alert, I didn't feel like Jones was particularly sharp in the next game either.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the next game? Should we hop straight into it?
Oh, my God.
Because this game, so there are very few games any season. It doesn't matter how good or bad the Sharks are. There are very few games where I feel like, you know what, I'm just not going to watch this game anymore. Fortunately, this game, I kept the TV on. The Sharks, not the best start in the world as far as score goes. These guys go down 3 goals in the first. That is your first period. Then the second period, Melker Carlson scores a shorthanded goal. Then Jeff Skinner scores, not, you know, 4 minutes later for Carolina. It is 4-1. Right now, you're probably not feeling too great, although the Sharks did start to look much better in the second period, in my mind, than they did in the first. The first was just depressing.
Yep. I'll jump in. I actually turned the game off to go watch stuff with my wife.
I know you did. And then Joe Thornton scores a power play goal. Hey, Joe Thornton shooting is always nice. And then Logan Couture in the third scores a power play goal. And by now you've got to be thinking a shorthanded and two power play goals. That's some pretty good special teams. Well, it gets even better because Barclay Goodrow scores a shorthanded goal to tie the game. And then the Sharks win in 22 seconds in overtime off of guess who? Guess who scores? Brent Burns.
I mean, I know who scores, so it wouldn't be a guess. So interesting, really interesting stat here that I would not have guessed, because the Sharks have been around, this is what, their 27th season now, right? 25th season was 2 years ago when they went to the Stanley Cup final, right?
Right.
This is the first time that the Sharks have ever won a game when trailing by 3 or more goals after the first period.
I did not know that.
In their entire existence.
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
I did know that if you asked me before the game if the Sharks would score 4 unanswered goals, and in general,
well, it wasn't 4 unanswered.
Would
well, I guess it was. Yeah, it was for the winner. Yeah, you're right. Once you got to OT, you're right.
But more so, if you told me that the Sharks would tie a game 4-4, and that two of those goals were shorties.
Yeah.
The Sharks. I don't have the stats in front of me, Ben. Are the Sharks the best shorthanded team as far as goals are concerned?
I don't think they're quite there. They're in terms of penalty killing.
Who scored? Yeah. Well, I'm not even talking about just doing.
They're second in the league, which is by the way. I mean, that's a huge swing from last year because they were garbage on the PK last year.
Right. I'm not even talking about doing penalty killing correctly. I'm just talking about scoring while shorthanded.
Hold on, I'm going to take a look at this because I didn't think they were
this season. Right? The last couple of weeks they've had a couple.
Yeah, I mean,
for those of you who are new to the sport, you're not really supposed to do that because you're down with a guy.
Yeah. I don't know, and
here's something even better. They're doing it without the shorthanded hero himself, Patrick Marleau. Right? Because back in the day, if a shorthanded goal was scored, you would assume it was him. Now you don't even know who's going to score the shorthanded goal. It could be anyone except for Paul Martin.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I can't tell. I hadn't seen a stat whether the Sharks were kind of head of the league in that sense.
It just feels that way to me. I don't know.
I mean, they should be after the way they've played the last few weeks. Let's see. It looks like the Sharks are actually nope, that's last year. Oh, never mind. Nobody's got this stat apparently.
You're blowing it. That's brought to you by SAP.
Exactly. Nope.
Well, anyway, if you didn't watch this game and you got nothing to do tonight or tomorrow night, I actually suggest you watch at least the second and third period. Actually, you should watch the first because you need to get the full effect of how depressing this game seemed like it was going to be. And it was fun. I was thoroughly entertained. The Sharks snap that sort of 2-game on the road skid, and pull through a fairly improbable comeback. Not that the Sharks aren't capable of it.
Well, and I want to talk about a couple of things about this too.
Yeah.
I mean, so not long ago, we were all pretty upset with the Sharks putting out the slowest 3-on-3 group they possibly could.
Right.
In a game and losing in ugly fashion in OT. And then what does DeBoer do? Runs out the same 3 assholes at the beginning of this OT. And so, you know, it was funny to watch Twitter, to watch the folks who were upset, obviously, to see this. And then literally 22 seconds later, and let's be honest, like, that all came down to the most amazing pass from Joe Pavelski to Burns.
Yes.
That I've seen in a while.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that pass was kind of amazing. So there's a little bit of luck there.
Yeah, but you know what? The Sharks, look, as close as the game was, as far as, like, possession was concerned, because it was pretty close, at least up until the end. I mean, the Sharks, outside of that first period, didn't really look bad. Like, they looked good, I thought, and they were battling hard, and it just, yeah. It was looking like kind of the same situation that you were talking about earlier, where it's sort of like Sharks were playing all right and the puck just wasn't going in the net. And then the puck just couldn't stop going in the net. there's not a lot of games where the Sharks score 5 goals this season.
No.
They've really struggled to score. So to see them do that and come back, now obviously I would prefer the Sharks win games 5-0 and not have to play from behind and all that stuff. But, them doing it and them scoring and, Burns scoring in there as well. You're talking about a guy who's been having trouble scoring and he scores a overtime game winner in a comeback game. That's going to boost everyone's confidence and hopefully give them some momentum going into the next game.
No, please don't talk about momentum.
I forgot.
Certainly Burns played like the forward we're used to him playing like. In scoring that goal, I had a couple funny moments in the game. Like that first shorthanded goal, my favorite part of that is the Hurricane who jumps off the ice as Tierney basically skates past him to create that 2-on-1 play. I haven't been able to see whether that guy needed desperately to get off the ice because somebody else had come back on out of confusion. If he'd sit on the ice, they would have gotten too many men, or what happened there. But if you watch that play, Tierney basically just skates by a guy who obliviously climbs over the boards.
Yeah.
And so that 2-on-1 partly happens because of a bad change, right? And then the other one, I mean, that pass from Hansen to Goodrow, where that puck ends up perfectly flat. I mean, it's a saucer pass, and it just hits and dies, on Goodrow's stick. I mean, I just said that Pavelski's pass was the best one I'd seen all year, and then that one, pretty amazing too. So, usually this year, what we've seen with those types of passes, instead of landing flat and being, perfect for somebody to tuck that puck away, instead it like ends up on its, end on its end and rolling away from some poor guy who doesn't even get a puck on net anymore. The funniest thing about this game is the 4 goals in regulation are all not even strength for the Sharks, right?
Right.
2 shorthanded, 2 power play. Now the Hurricanes, all 3 of their goals in the early going were 5-on-5. So I feel like the Hurricanes were actually the better team in this game. The Sharks are lucky to come away with what they did.
Ben, always the optimist.
But you gotta win games like that. When you have a bad night or a bad period or what have you to make the playoffs. So whatever. I mean, this game is a game of bounces, right? That's what can be so frustrating about it when. You look at a team like the Sharks, which again they're pretty top of the heap in most possession metrics. They're not even that far off in terms of high danger scoring chances. They're top 10, but they're just not putting the puck in the net most nights. So as you say, when they score 5, you're kind of like, "Whoo, that was cool."
Yeah, do that again and
yeah,
again.
Please.
Shit, why weren't you doing that all week?
Yeah, what the hell? Why hasn't Barkley Goodrow been playing more? DeBoer.
Good question. Ben, let's fast forward to 3 stars of the week. And I need a second to think about this. Why don't you go first?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Colin, would you like to go? Oh, no, that's right.
That guy's fired. All right. I get
love you, Colin.
So I'm going to give Joe Thornton 3rd star of the week, mainly because he had 3 points.
I thought you were going to say because of his shirtless bobblehead, because he has to allow that to happen.
I suppose. So another funny stat that I saw Darren Stevens post on Twitter after this game is so Jumbo scores 3 points, and this is the first time he's done that is at 38 or older. And Darren Stevens mentioned that there was a Sharks player who 4 times has scored 3 or more points after the age of 38 for the Sharks. Can you guess who that was?
Thinking.
Yeah, there's not a lot of players who qualify.
After the age of 38 for the Sharks?
After the age of 38. Now, I'll give you a hint.
It better not be Claude Lemieux.
No, he came to the Sharks quite old.
Yeah, and he
played that. Defense.
Is it Ozilinch?
Nope.
No, because Ozilinch was a Shark when he was younger, too.
Yep. He came back as an old guy, he was terrible.
Well, we had Messier for a day.
Defenseman.
Right. I don't know. Who is it?
Played for LA before he came here. Works for LA.
Who?
Rob Blake.
Oh, yeah. He was captain, too.
Yeah. So 4 times.
I constantly forget that Rob Blake was a Shark. I know it sounds horrible, but I still don't believe that occurred.
Me too. I forget all the time. Second star of the week, I'm going to give to Barkley Goodrow.
Okay.
Because 2 goals and an injured a game off for injury in between. I want to see more of Goodrow. Whatever position they decide to play him in, since he's been playing center sometimes, even though he's never played center before. And first star of the week, I'm going to give to Logan Couture, just because it seems like whenever the Sharks desperately need him to be in the right place at the right time, he's either blocking a shot or scoring a laser of a power play goal.
Yeah, I don't disagree with your 3 stars, except I'm going to tie your 3rd star. Because you said Goodrow was your 3rd, or you said Thornton was your 3rd?
Thornton 3rd, Goodrow 2nd, Logan Couture 1st. For all around play. And I'll be honest, I'm going to give Hurdle an honorable mention because he's just been a monster on the puck without really getting a lot out of it. And he drew a key penalty against the Hurricanes to get to the power play that Jumbo passed into the net.
Yeah, I'm pretty much... Yeah, you basically named my 3. There's really no point in me reiterating what you said. I was looking there for a second, and I was debating something, and now I regret the error of my ways. Hey,
don't
folks.
Be scared.
No. It's not worth it. More games next week than this week by 1. The Sharks take on the Ottawa Senators tomorrow. That is Saturday for those of you who don't know when we do this podcast. Usually, sometimes Sunday.
It'll be today if you listen to us on iTunes.
That's right. Yes. Whenever it's Saturday the 9th. There you go. There's a day.
There you go. Perfect.
We play Ottawa at home. Then, hey, you like back to backs? I hope you do because that's what this week is.
Wait, hold on. I don't like back to backs.
Well, then you might not want to pay attention this week because the Sharks have a back to back game, then against the Minnesota Wild at home again, and then a couple of days off, and then a road back to back against Calgary on Thursday, and I think an AHL team on Friday.
Yeah, I like to rip on Vancouver as much as the next guy, but they've actually been as thoroughly mediocre as the Sharks this year.
Yeah, no, literally as thoroughly mediocre because they are tied with us in the standings in the Pacific Division at 32 points, although we have played 2 less games than them. The Sharks sitting 3rd in the Pacific Division. That's good enough for a playoff spot at the moment.
Which, by the way, interestingly,
yeah.
Before the win last night, they'd actually fallen out of a playoff spot.
Well, we mentioned before that right now, the Pacific Division is pretty basically, I mean, really, if the Sharks hadn't lost the first 2 games this week, they would be closer to Vegas. I mean, and I'm not just being obvious there. Like, really, second, Vegas has kind of been pretty locked into that second spot lately, but the rest of the pack below them have sort of like, come close and then pulled away, close and pulled away. Because really, San Jose, Vancouver, Calgary, and Anaheim, you're talking 3 teams with 32 points. Anaheim's got 31. Yeah. Edmonton is just, you want to laugh at those guys. And Arizona shouldn't even be in the league anymore. But that last playoff spot, or potentially 2, depending on how wild card ends up shaking out, are tight.
Well, fortunately, Arizona will be relegated to Seattle next year. So
not relegated, moved, Ben.
Well, did you see? Actually, no, because did you see that the NHL accepted an application from Seattle for an expansion team?
No, when did that happen?
I saw the news today.
No way, the Metropolitans are coming back? It better be the Metropolitans with their sweet S logo.
Oh, sorry. My bad. They've been granted permission to apply for an expansion team.
Oh, God. That's not the same thing, Ben. Seattle to Quebec City. All the latest expansion and relocation possibilities. So here we are again, folks. The same conversation we've been having over and over and over and over and over. Speaking of things you can listen to over and over again.
I mean, I guess you can subscribe. It comes down to the city of Seattle has approved the Key Arena remodel this month. So that opens it up to them actually being ready for an NHL team sometime this decade.
Yeah. I've heard that before. you can listen to we can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. If you're on Android platforms, you know what to do. You can do the same over there. You can go to our website at circlingthecup.com. It's not a flashy website. It's just a good way to listen to the podcast at work and pretend like you're doing actual work instead of browsing the web. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup, where we post lots of pictures of shirtless Joe Thornton bobblehead and other things. Or you can follow the more heady intellectual side of our social media team over Twitter at Circling the Cup. It's much more intellectual and occasionally pictures of Ben's daughter. Now,
shout out to one of our listeners, Mark Haney, who said nice things about us last week.
Oh, that was very nice, by the way. Seriously, I'm not being sarcastic.
You rule, Mark.
You rule. Yes. When you're doing your thing and listen to the podcast, you just know that we didn't mean to initially, but just now we're dedicating the 78th podcast to you. And that's impressive because we typically only dedicate podcasts to people that score their first goal or leave the team. So that's a pretty high standing that you got there. Ben, do you have any other last thoughts before we go?
Oh,
that was rhetorical.
Boy, no. You know what? I mean, save it for the next podcast.
Oh,
which will hopefully have three of us. Colin.
We'll see. Maybe Colin will come. It's like whack-a-mole with our podcast hosts. It really is this year.
Indeed.
Ben, say bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.